Welcome to Screen's Award Seasons podcast. I'm Matt Mueller, the editor of Screen International, and we'll be tracking award season over the next few weeks, leading up to the BAFTA Film Awards ceremony on February 19th and the Oscar ceremony on March 10th. I'll be joined along the way by my illustrious Screen colleagues and fellow award season nuts as we parse the season, look at which titles and talents are clicking with voters and which are struggling to make headway, and hopefully bring a little bit of insight and fun to what we all know is a very long season with hundreds of titles in the mix. For today's episode, I'm delighted to be joined by Screen's executive editor for reviews and new talent, Fionnuala Halligan, and our awards and box office editor, Charles Gant. Welcome, Finn and Charles. Let's dive straight in. If we look back at the year so far, I'd say there are a few titles that jumped out as early front runners leading up to this point. Coming out of Cannes, we had Martin Scorsese's Killers of the Flower Moon, Jonathan Glazer's The Zone of Interest, Justine Triet's Anatomy of a Fall won the Palme d'Or, and we'll come to discuss what that has meant from a French industry perspective later on. Over the summer, we had the Barbenheimer phenomenon, which not only conquered the world, but it unleashed two very strong contenders for the award season. Yorgos Lanthimos's Poor Things won the Venice Golden Lion, staking its claim, and that was followed by a surprise winner of the Toronto Audience Award, Cord Jefferson's American Fiction, which instantly propelled that film into the conversation. So looking at the year so far and where we are now, where do you think that things currently stand, Finn? What's your take on the season up to this date?
Hi, Matt. Well, it's been interesting, hasn't it? Because we've been stuck in a writer's strike, we've been stuck in a SAG Guild strike, and so the awards have suffered a bit in that there's just been a lack of clarity. Because as we all know on this podcast, it's one thing. Awards don't happen to you. You have to go out there and campaign for them. And it's not been easy to tell who's going to campaign for what. But now that we're going into the race, it feels like we're getting onto familiar ground. I still don't know, and Charles will know more about this than me, that now the actors are back on the scene who looks like they're going to be actively campaigning. But I am relieved for Martin Scorsese, who's had to handle the entire weight of publicity for Killers of the Flower Moon by himself since Cannes, with the actors off the table. So I think he can probably take a breather.
Well, I've actually really enjoyed going to the award season screenings and seeing all of the craft practitioners, all of the heads of department on the stage. For me, it's been a real refreshing breath of fresh air to actually hear from the people, all the people who together collectively make the films. Although this week I was at the Iron Claw, and they had like the director and a ton of actors on the stage, including Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, Harris Dickinson, and Lily James. And it was kind of like, yep, the actors, they're back, and they're all going to be mingling with the voters afterwards with drinks being offered. So yeah, we are really back to how it was before. And certainly there are a lot of actors who are very keen to talk to voters. That's definitely my insight from the last week that I've had.
Yeah, they ramped things up again very quickly with the actors, didn't they? It was, I think even before the strike was actually officially done, we were hearing rumblings in conversations with that had been set up for the following week, you know, assuming that the strike was gonna finish when it did, and in fact it did finish. So there's obviously a lot of anticipation around that. I was at a drinks reception for the BIFFA nominees the other day, and I was speaking to a production designer who I won't say, but she said, well, I guess we all fade back into the background now that the actors are back. So yes, I think that sadly now that the actors are back, they will sort of take up a lot of oxygen and airplay. But of course there are some really amazing performances this year to discuss, and we will probably look at those in more detail in a future podcast. But for now, let's have a quick chat about the British contenders. I mean, you look at, I mentioned the BIFFAs, and you look at their nominations, you think that what they've come up with this framed the conversation pretty strongly about around what the kind of strong British titles are, certainly on the independent side. I mean, you know, they have in their best sort of film category, Andrew Haig's All of Us Strangers, Rye Lane, Scrapper, Molly Manning Walker's How to Have Sex, which won the Uncertain Regard Prize at Cannes, and Femme. So, I mean, they're all nominated across multiple categories. It makes it look like a really strong year for British film. Do you both agree with that?
Well, I would agree with you that certainly that there were the first four films that you mentioned. I think we all thought they are going to get the best British independent film nomination. They're going to get the best director nomination, and they're going to get screenplay. And lo and behold, that happened for All of Us Strangers, Rye Lane, How to Have Sex and Scrapper. I think there was a genuine mystery as to which films would kind of join the party. And it turned out to be really one film, which was Femme. I'm a big fan of the film. I didn't think that it was necessarily, there didn't seem to be like a big awards push on it. So I was really delighted when that film sort of entered the pantheon alongside those other four totally nailed on movies and got all of those, you know, 11 nominations, including film, director, screenplay, all the big categories.
Yeah, I think that it's been a fantastic year for British independent cinema so far. I mean, one of the best I can remember, where you're not at the position of sort of maybe feeling that films have been overpraised to make this category. There's nothing in there that doesn't deserve to be in there. I mean, not saying that other candidates in the past haven't been deserving, but these are really good films. So the one that I think is probably going to have the most knock-on effect, the one that's bigger, so we'll go from the BIFFs through to the BAFTAs and probably through to the Oscars, is obviously All of Us Strangers. That one has the most potential, while the others would have more potential in a BAFTA British film or debut scenario, I would reckon. That's my thinking.
You're probably right. And I think, you know, perhaps some of that comes down to the fact that the actors are more known to probably both BAFTA and Oscar voters. I mean, obviously, Andrew Scott has profile, but Paul Mescal clearly coming off an Oscar nomination for After Sun, very high profile actor. Claire Foy, Jamie Bell, all kind of names that are very much in the frame, you know, in any kind of award season. Whereas I think the actors in the other British films probably are a little bit less well known. And although apart from George Mackay and Femme, who obviously does have his own profile.
You also have two outside the independent sphere, but, you know, we have the Saltburn and Is Zone of Interest a British film as well? So, you know, is that?
Well, that's the question. I think, you know, we've said All of Us Strangers probably is the one that has a strong chance to sort of go beyond BIFFA, register strongly with BAFTA voters, possibly even with Academy voters. I mean, what other British films do we think are in the mix, you know, in those bigger plays? I mean, are we, you know, even looking, I suppose, from the perspective of the famous Gravity situation, where that was nominated for Best British Film at the BAFTAs, and, you know, I think very few people would consider that a British film, but what are the bigger sort of titles? I mean, you mentioned Saltburn, Finn, obviously, Emerald Fennell's London Film Festival opener. Seems to be a strong one in the mix. And in fact, that's the cover of our first awards issue, which just came out today. So definitely one that they're sort of putting their eggs behind.
I also just, I'm going to get in here, as I always do quite reliably, to say that we have, you know, Cillian Murphy and Oppenheimer and Andrew Scott, and we also have Barry Keoghan in Saltburn. So, you know, hello Ireland again. It was a bit funny last year when all of Ireland got out behind the Academy Awards, but I see good things for our small country again.
I'm very much team Barry for Saltburn. I would love to see him be nominated again, as he was last year. He won, didn't he? He won the BAFTA last year. So yes. I'd love to see that happen for him. I think Saltburn is a fantastic film. I'd really love to see it flourish. Wonka. I think Wonka is going to be the interesting one. I don't know if that is going to count as a British film. I assume it will be. I mean, all the from a kind of producerial point of view and the filmmaker. So I don't know whether they all submit it for that category. But yeah, I think Wonka could be a bit of a wild card.
Yeah, I'm interested to know what is submitted as a British film, because of course there was the year when Christopher Nolan, whether he made the decision or not, they decided not to submit, was it Dunkirk, to the British film category and just go for the main categories?
I think you recall correctly, yeah, Matt.
So again, I mean, I suppose Oppenheimer would be another one, right, where potentially that could be entered for the British film category. Will it be? That is also the question. Going back to what you mentioned, Finn, about the zone of interest, right? So it, obviously being entered in the international feature category, for the Oscars as the UK's submission, a German language film set around the Auschwitz concentration camp. And clearly in doing this, the UK have given themselves a very strong front runner for that category, which is very interesting. None of us will deny it's like an absolutely amazing film. I just wonder, do you think this is playing fair? I mean, British producer, British filmmaker, British money. Would it be odd at all to see the Oscar for International Feature going to a British film? Do we think voters will care about this at all?
I personally think that it's just important that film gets the boost of being in foreign, like what used to be called foreign language and is now called international category, of course, in some way. And it's very difficult. You know, it's one of those films that has to find a home somewhere. So it's good that it landed with Britain. So I don't think really unfairness would come into play on that front. I mean, I can't see who would object. There was a birth there. There are always, every year, there are films that don't get the nomination for countless reasons. And it would be cruel if Zone of Interest missed out. And it's really funny because in the European Film Awards category, of course, you have Zone of Interest up against an Anatomy of a Fall. I mean, not sort of sent off to the nether regions of international film, but as best film. And it's a neck and neck race between the two of them. But Anatomy of a Fall will not feature, certainly with the Academy Awards, because France didn't nominate it as the country's entry. Instead, they went for The Taste of... Is it called The Taste of Things? it keeps changing its title, or it kept changing its title. It's The Taste of Things, right?
It is indeed.
I'm not sure, is that where they've landed? Because I know it was the Passion of Dodin Beaufort for a while, and then it was the Pot au Feu coming out of Cannes, and then it seemed to become The Taste of Things, with some rumblings that it might keep the Pot au Feu for some territories. But yeah,
the UK definitely is going with The Taste of Things. They've decided to fall in line with the... They think there's no point hanging on to the Pot au Feu. It's like, that ship has very, very much sailed on the Pot au Feu.
It was probably a ship that never really should have left the harbor in the first place. But anyway, at least they've landed on something that has a little bit more, you know, will register more likely with voters. I mean, but the whole Anatomy of a Fall versus Taste of Things, you know, you wouldn't say farrago, but certainly there was talk that, let's say, Justine Triet was less than happy to be overlooked as the French Oscar submission. And you wonder whether, although the fact is that it clearly met the criteria in terms of that a lot of the film does unfold in English, Sandra Hüller's character speaks English, it's a kind of key plot point in the film, whether they just thought, you know what, that's just going to be a bit of a stumbling block, maybe it'll hurt its chances, or whether they just thought The Taste of Things is more like a old-fashioned, traditional, hazily shot, beautiful picture of, you know, traditional France that we'll go register more strongly with voters. What do you two both think about this, the divide between these two films?
I agree with you, Matt. I mean, that's what I felt when I saw that Justine Triet had lost that French nomination. And I felt, I met her a couple of weeks ago, and I know that she is still unhappy that she didn't get it. She's not sort of, you know, joining this sort of, you know, oh, don't worry, it's a pleasure to have just gotten the Palme d'Or. She's feeling a bit bruised she didn't get it. However, I mean, I'm a big fan of Anatomy of a Fall. I've watched it twice, and to be honest, I look forward to watching it again. I think it's one of those films that bears repeated viewings. There's a lot in there. It's playing very well with audiences, both domestically and internationally. And I like the idea in a way. Sometimes it's quite easy when, with awards voters, if a film is in the international category, to sort of tick that box and say, okay, well, I know it's a strong film, it'll probably win international, and it's a sort of a safe harbor for it. But now it kind of gets the opportunity with the right push to come out of that box and compete in other categories. And I'd love to see Sandra Hüller pushed a bit for that one.
Well, All Quiet on the Western Front did manage to kind of straddle both horses successfully, but I do take your point, Finn, that we now need to get behind this film, and it'd be fantastic for Justine Triet to get a director nomination, so I'm calling an actor. What I am hearing from French friends is that there was some concern there that, although in France, the fact that the boy who plays the son in the film, fantastic young actor, Milo Machado Grainer, I think he's called. The fact that he does not have any visual disability at all was not an issue in France. And there was some concern that American voters might make an issue of this. And by making it the international film, it would kind of put it under an uncomfortable spotlight. I really hope, although I feel bad for bringing it up, because I think it's, you know, for me, not an issue, although I don't have a visual disability, so perhaps it's not my place to say. I think he's fantastic in the film. I love the film. I want to see it go across the board with nominations. It's really one of my real favorite films of this year.
That's a really interesting point, Charles. I mean, and you know, thank you for bringing it up. And I think you are right that those are probably issues that maybe do need to be considered when you're looking at you know, the questions around authenticity and casting, which are kind of a very important part, you know, the industry, and particularly in the US and the UK now, those kind of questions come more to the fore. Now, you both will have seen many more international feature contenders than me. What are some other highlights for both of you in terms of what's been submitted for Oscar, but also titles that weren't submitted by their countries that might register with BAFTA voters? Do you have any particular favorites that you want to shout about now?
Well, I've seen much less than Finn, so if I can go first and then Finn can speak after. But of the ones that I've seen, I love The Teacher's Lounge, the film from Germany. I think that is an absolutely brilliant film about a school teacher who initiates an investigation into some thefts in the school, and then the whole thing completely spirals out of control. And it becomes, you know, absolutely fascinating depiction of what it is life like to be a school teacher in today's age. It was gripping, really compelling. I did like, although it's quite an old fashioned film, I did love the Danish film, The Promised Land, starring Mads Mikkelsen. I watched that recently and thought that was, you know, it's sort of, you know, very much traditional. I mean, you know, the antagonist is almost moustache twirling in it, but it was very entertaining. And the other film I really love is the documentary from Ukraine, 20 Days in Mariupol, which I thought was so impactful, and I hope to see it flourish in documentary, but I'd really like to see it also succeeding in international feature film and at the BAFTAs in film not in the English language.
Yeah, documentaries are increasingly entered by countries as well. That's become, I mean, it's always happened, but it feels like it definitely happens on a more frequent basis now. I think a Collective was the Romanian film, wasn't it, that made the kind of final Oscar shortlist a couple of years ago. And clearly has, you know, encouraged other entries in that regard. Finn, what about you? What are your international feature hot tips for anyone who's wondering what to watch?
Well, I agree with Charles with the Teacher's Lounge and also The Promised Land, which I found enormously entertaining and in all the best possible ways. I also really liked the Polish entry, which is called The Peasants, which is a sort of, it looks like it's rotoscoped, but it's an oil painting. It's oil painting, and it's sort of, yeah, it's animated but using oil paintings, and it's again a bit like Nicolas Arcel's film. It's a kind of a classic story of love and disenfranchisement and discrimination, you know, amongst a crowd of peasants, really, and working the farms, you know, in a sort of a feudal area. So it's quite a simple story, but it becomes incredibly effective through this technique. I'll also say, because I don't, there's so many you can talk about, but I've had quite an interesting time this year looking at films from the Middle East that and North Africa, which have really become much stronger, really, if you look at them as a group over the last few years. And you have documentaries in there as well. So you have, say, The Mother of All Lies, which is coming in from Morocco, or you have Four Daughters, which is a hybrid, really. Four Daughters is coming from Tunisia. Then you have one that really struck me, which was The Burdened from Yemen. Just not a war story, just a story about normal people. Mami Wata from Nigeria. From Palestine, we have Bye Bye Tiberius, which is another documentary. It's by Hayam Abbas's daughter. You have Banal and Adama, which is a more classic kind of Cannes type feature, which lo and behold competed at Cannes. You can kind of recognize it. But then Sudan, there's Goodbye Julia, which is a sort of very dramatic woman's story, really, about two women bonding, and the lies are told, and there's death of a cover up, and it's got a kind of an epic scale. So I've enjoyed my way around the Middle East selection. So if I was recommending to anyone listening to this podcast who's looking at the foreign language or international category, sorry, I keep saying foreign language, I'm so dated, to have a look at Middle East and Africa and see what's on offer this year. It's really very, very interesting.
Well, that's exciting. It's great to hear so many strong contenders from that part of the world. It's we know, I mean, sort of tracking these things over the years, how European films just naturally have an advantage in this category, and obviously are likely to be the ones that voters will probably watch first if they're prioritizing. But it's great to hear some other titles that are, that could be in the mix from this part of the world and see if they can get through. I think the director of Four Daughters, Kauthar Ben-Hania, she was certainly made the shortlist a couple of years ago with The Man Who Sold His Skin. So
Yes.
she's obviously an acclaimed filmmaker with returning with this film, which premiered in Cannes this year.
And Bye Bye Tiberius, which sort of, if I was to say to you, it's her daughter's documentary, but it's about four generations of Palestinian women, and Hayam Abbas, who we know from Succession, being just one of those generations, and it is a documentary, but just with what's happening in the world at the moment, I do feel as well that that's it's a really, really great documentary, and it's just so interesting, and I feel that that's one that when word starts to flow out a bit, as it always does in the international category, that that's one that people will really want to see.
And just going back to The Peasants, which you mentioned, that and that hand-painted animation technique, because it's from the same team that made Loving Vincent, which of course was a big international hit a few years ago. And I think the look of this one is kind of the techniques are similar as well. And we have a
Yes.
little screen plug here, a fantastic feature on it in our new issue, which as I said landed today by our colleague Ben Dalton. So if people want to read more about that, please seek that out.
Yeah, it's just so unusual how the power of a simple story can be conveyed through this flowing oil painting technique that they have. It just in a way, the story's almost like it could be like a fairy tale. It could be a Brothers Grimm, or you know what I mean. This is what happens to a woman who steps out of line in a village full of peasants, but it just becomes very impactful. And check it out.
I can't wait to see it. It's also with my box office hat on. It's a huge hit in Poland.
Oh.
They've been essentially number one or number two in the box office charts for 5 weeks, and the admissions have barely gone down, like week by week. It's just been the same sort of 100, and it was 10 to 20,000 people going to see it every weekend. So they're now into like 1.2 million admissions, and it seems to be showing no sign of slowing. So it's great to see that really connecting with the Polish audience, and that should also work help them in the UK. There's so many, as we know, lots of Polish people here love watching Polish films. Hopefully they'll come and see The Peasants.
And then, interestingly, we did mention that obviously Poland selected that as its submission over Agnieszka Holland's Green Border, which probably was a more controversial film in Poland. It certainly kind of encountered some critiques from local politicians, but in fact, that's one that has made the shortlist of the European Film Awards. So that's in the, up for best film against Jonathan Glazer's film, the Justine Triet film, and also Aki Kaurismäki's Fallen Leaves and Matteo Garrone's Io Capitano, which the latter two are Finland's and Italy's submissions this year. There's probably a few big contenders we haven't touched on. I mean, obviously, Society of the Snow by J.A. Bayona, a great Spanish filmmaker, is Spain's submission. I did mention Kaurismäki's film Fallen Leaves. I mean, I think that's kind of one that probably is a front runner for many people. Went down very well in Cannes. In fact, it won our Screen Cannes jury grade, didn't it, Finn?
Yes, it did. It did. And actually, while we're on, Matt, when you mentioned the Screen Cannes jury grid, I would just to note that it's a sad moment in screen and in French cinema. And for anyone who know him, that Michel Simon, the editor of Positif and the man who is such a force in the, I suppose, dissemination, critique, appreciation of French films, Michel Simon has passed away. And now he supported our grid right from the beginning and was very loyal to us. He would never join another grid. He was only with the Screen Grid and we'll miss him.
Oh, he was a legend. So it was always a pleasure when he used to pop into the film office to hand in his latest score. So yeah, he will very much be missed.
Very much so.
And finally, we're holding our own awards on Thursday, November 23rd, the Big Screen Awards, and we're delighted that we're going to be presenting our Outstanding Contribution to UK Film Special Recognition Award to Film 4, which has backed a number of titles in this year's race, including The Zone of Interest and Poor Things, and also How to Have Sex. I mean, their legacy and impact on the British film industry and the kind of films that are produced and win awards is massive. And Charles, as part of our celebration, you wrote an absolutely brilliant feature for our November issue in which you spoke to all the former heads of Film 4, including its current head, Daniel Betsek. If anyone listening has not read that piece yet, I highly recommend you head over to screendaily.com right now to do so. It's an absolutely fantastic read. But Charles, what were some of your key takeaways from speaking to the likes of Tessa Ross and David Cossey and Daniel Betsek for that piece about Film 4's legacy and impact?
It was very funny writing it, because I said to them, look, this is a celebration of Film 4, and we're Screen International, we're a serious trade paper, we don't just want, you know, puff. And they were very candid about the challenges that they faced. That they all seem to really face sort of similar challenges, which was that Channel 4 all along had been saying to them, guys, you're doing a great job, please can you make some more money. So like every regime just seemed to be, yeah, we love it, we love the films you're making. Slumdog Millionaire wins Oscars, we love that. 12 Years a Slave wins Oscars, we love that. Carry on doing that, and can we like please make some more money. So it was really interesting talking to them how much the challenges remained the same throughout. How many years is it? 41 years.
Yeah, that 82 they launched. Yeah,
40 years. I mean, they were all kind of working under similar pressures, and really managing to sort of navigate that, and still carrying on making. And you know, not every single film that Film 4 invested in is a masterpiece, but really, when you look at it over the decades, it's pretty impressive what they managed to do.
Well, it's amazing, and we look forward to celebrating with them at the Big Screen Awards. And also, they obviously have more than two strong contenders for this year's race. I'm sure we'll be talking about The Zone of Interest and Poor Things on upcoming podcast episodes as well. But for now, Finn and Charles, happy viewing. Carry on with the viewing. I look forward to catching up on what things you've seen next. I'm going to do some more catching up myself on the various contenders that I need to see on the BAFTA portal, and we'll catch up again soon. Thank you very much both for taking part.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks, Matt.
That brings us to the end of this episode of the Screen Awards podcast. Thank you to my colleagues, Finn and Charles, for joining me today. And thank you very much for tuning in. Our podcast is available to subscribe to wherever you listen. Please do rate and review us along the way. And keep up with the latest news from the international screen industries at screendaily.com. And follow us on Twitter at Screen Daily. Hope you enjoyed the episode. See you next time. This episode was produced and edited by Danielle Kosh.